This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Michael Gordon, is covering the war in Chechnya for the New York Times. He's the paper's Moscow bureau chief and is now stationed just across the Chechen border in the Russian town Mozdok. Most days he gets into Chechnya by a Russian military helicopter, which also escorts Russian TV crews. The New York Times and the BBC are now the only news organizations accredited by the Russian military. Chechnya was part of the Soviet Union, but Chechen rebels have been trying to establish an independent republic ever since the breakup of the Soviet Union. In 1994, the Russian military went in to establish control. But 2 years later, the troops pulled out, leaving the status of Chechnya ambiguous. In August, Russia sent its military back into Chechnya. The architect of the second war is Vladimir Putin, who became Russia's acting president after Yeltsin stepped down. Putin hopes to win the presidential election on March 26th. His popularity may hinge on winning a victory in Chechnya soon. We called Michael Gordon yesterday in the late afternoon. It was midnight his time, and he had just filed the piece that is in today's New York Times. There's no plumbing in the house where he's staying in Mozdok, but he does have a satellite phone, and that's how we spoke to him. He told us he hasn't been to the Chechen capital of Grozny recently, where intense fighting is underway, because the Russian military doesn't want him to see it. I asked him where he had been earlier in the day.
Today was one of those days you have when you're a correspondent trying to cover the Chechen war. Today I was at the Mozdok military base, which is the Russian operational command center and the main base from which they bomb Grozny and Chechnya. It's just outside of Chechnya. That's what I saw. I saw the muddy Mozdok air base. But in recent weeks, because I have been going with the Russian television crews in and out of Chechnya, I've been had an opportunity to get around the place. We've been to Argun, which is a city that was seized by the rebels and retaken by the Russians. They brought us there to show us how secure it was, but once we got there, there were snipers all over the place. Into Dubai-Yurt, which is in the south at the beginning of the mountain, where there's a lot of fighting. I've been into Shali, which is another heavily contested place. And I spent the early part of New Year's Eve on the outskirts of Grozny, back before dark, at a field hospital where they were treating soldiers who were and wounded inside the city. So I've had an opportunity over the last several weeks, really, to see a good part of the fighting in Chechnya. I've also had a chance to see how the Russian military deals with the Russian television press and how the Russian military both helps and tries to control the Russian media.
So what happens every day? The Russian military crew picks you up and tells you where you're going?
Sometimes they don't tell us. Sometimes they just take us there.
Do you feel out of control?
No. It's they're pretty professional. You know, their helicopter pilots are certainly like to show off all of their talents, and they zig and zag all over the skyline and fly the map of the earth. Sometimes that's necessary because they don't seem to be, some of the Russian-controlled areas don't seem to be fully under Russian control, and they're concerned about being shot at. But no, I feel like the people I'm with are professional, but the war is a very fluid situation, and it's not the kind of conflict where there's a easily discernible kind of front. Especially in the past 2 weeks, areas that the Russians seized in December become battlegrounds overnight.
Well, it sounds like the really big battle now is in Grozny, which is the capital of Chechnya. And I was reading that Lieutenant General Gennady Troshev, who's a Russian commander, said that there's an ecological catastrophe now in Grozny because rebels have started fires and blown up chemicals. Have you heard about this?
Well, I heard about it because I was there when he said it.
Oh,
but
uh-huh.
I mean, they're basically two main battle areas right now in Chechnya. There's Grozny, the capital of Chechnya, which is a rather large city and larger than most people imagine. I stood on a hillside on that noteworthy New Year's Eve looking down on it. And it's basically to Chechnya what Los Angeles must be to California. It's a large, sprawling city. It's sort of elongated, one of the biggest cities in the North Caucasus. And there are anywhere from 500 to several thousand militants holed up in there. And they've turned the cellars into barricades, and they've mined the streets, and they're carrying on their effective partisan defense. There's a second battle going on in the Chechen highlands to the south, and there's a lot of fierce fighting. Russians and the rebels fight for control of the mountains. And then there's the guerrilla war. What the rebels have tried to do is reconnect their forces, the ones in the mountains and the one in Grozny, and link them up. What the Russians are trying to do is isolate both groups and defeat them. But the battle, as you point out, that's getting all the attention right now, and I think was justly so, is Grozny. And the famous Trochev remark about the ecological catastrophe was really a propaganda point that he was making, trying to justify the Russian offensive on the city, which is very severe and which is taking place despite the presence of anywhere of several thousand to 40,000 civilians who are trapped in there.
Have you met civilians who are trapped in the places that you've been?
Well, I haven't been under fire in Grozny, but I've interviewed on a number of occasions. I've interviewed civilians who've come right out of there. The Russians established two so-called humanitarian corridors. They were hoping to get the people out so they could turn the city into a free fire zone. But most of the people many of the people in there are just too afraid to leave. They're either too old, or they've been hurt, or they're just too frightened. But I did stand for several days in the edge of the northern checkpoint and talked to people who had just gotten out and been in Grozny only a couple hours before and even been shot at as they were trying to leave. They're not sure by whom. And they describe it as a hellish place. They live in cellars, basements. They have very little to eat, no medicine, maybe not drinking water. There are marauders all around. They're being shelled by their own army.
Why are they being shelled by their own army?
Well, the Russian military is not practiced at precision warfare. I mean, recall all the images you saw from the Kosovo conflict, which I also covered for the Times, and the laser-guided bombs, and trying to hit targets with pinpoint accuracy. With an eye towards limiting civilian casualties, and still there were mistakes in cases where refugee columns were hit. Russian military just doesn't operate that way. Concept of collateral damage just doesn't appear to be in their vocabulary. Their idea of a precision weapon is artillery and unguided bomb. And in the process of trying to take the war to the rebels, they're also hitting their own population.
The Russians tried to prevent Chechnya from seceding back in 1994 to 1996. I mean, that was a long war, and the Russians ended up pulling out. Now the Russians are fighting the Chechens again, trying to prevent Chechen from being independent. Why did the Russians go back?
Well, there are several reasons. One, the Chechens started it. And maybe the Russian response is disproportionate, but if you recall, back in August, there was a group of militants. Not all of these people are Chechens, by the way. They do include some people from the Middle East and perhaps some mercenaries and some fundamentalists from other regions, crashed into Dagestan. And there was a fight in Dagestan between groups of militants who had left Chechnya, trying to expand their territory, and Russian forces that were trying to protect Dagestan from an incursion by these groups of militants. Then there was the bombing of the apartment houses in Moscow. Nobody knows who did it exactly, but much of Russian society is prepared to believe the militants were somehow involved. And then there was a sense among the military that they just wanted to get even for what happened the last time around, and that perhaps if they did it better this time and used twice as many forces, which is what they seem to be doing, they might come out on top. And you add to that a sense of sort of national humiliation. And Russians, I think, as just a society, as a, reached a point where they thought that they had suffered enough indignity, and they, and if nothing else, they were going to show that they were the master of their own home and could control a piece of territory that, to the world agrees, is legally part of the Russian Federation.
Do you think the Russian army is using any different tactics now than it did the first time it tried to prevent Chechnya from breaking away in 1994 to 96?
Well, they are in a certain sense. They started off by trying to avoid direct clashes with the rebels and trying to rely to a great extent on air power and artillery, trying to intimidate cities and villages into surrendering and avoiding street clashes. They said at the beginning, for example, that they wouldn't storm Grozny. But as the war has intensified, they seem to be falling into the old trap that they were in the last war. And they seem to have got themselves involved in just bloody urban warfare, despite all their vows just a few weeks ago that they weren't going to storm Grozny.
Urban warfare. What is this urban warfare like? Maybe you could describe to us a little bit. Is there like house-to-house fighting, hand-to-hand fighting?
Yeah, I've talked to soldiers on the outskirts of Grozny who have been in the fighting recently. And I've talked to them in the military hospital here in Mozdok, near the base. People have been wounded in Grozny. And tactics are not that sophisticated. And many of the troops are not that experienced. Essentially what happens is the Russians lay down a curtain of fire. They pummel the city with artillery and now with airstrikes. But when they see any sign of resistance by a sniper, they just blow up the building, regardless of who may be in and around it. Then they send troops in to, quote, clean the city. And these troops are not soldiers. They're interior ministry troops, because they try to maintain the fiction that they're just quelling a local disturbance and not really fighting a war against their own population. And many of these troops I've talked to are young, they're 20, they've been conscripted, they're not volunteers, they haven't received a lot of training. And what they do is they go, they surround the house, they go in there room to room looking for weapons, looking for rebels. If they run up against stiff resistance, they pull back. I'll start the process all over again, shelling the house, trying to pummel the resistance, and then they go back in. The problem is the rebels hide in the basement. They endure the shelling, and they just wait for the Russians to return. So the Russians have taken enormous casualties in Grozny. No one is quite sure how many because of the peculiar system they've established for counting their own losses, but they're very sizable. And they keep, I saw the field hospital where the wounded are being treated, and the truckloads of fresh recruits going back to the fray. But it seems to be a price that the Army and the Interior Ministry is willing to pay to secure the city.
Do you have a sense of what the morale is like in the Army?
Well, I think it varies. I think that Russians in the military do not have a very high opinion of Chechens. I think there's a strong element of racism there. And so they also have been told that they're not really fighting Chechen rebels. They're really fighting bin Laden and Arabs. Keep talking about how they're fighting the Arabs because there's some Islamic militants and mercenaries mixed in there. And so I think that they basically think that the cause is right. And I think among Russian soldiers, there is a waning morale. They have a lot of respect for the Chechens and the militants as fighters. They're afraid of them at night. And certain checkpoints, it's the rebels who own the night, not the Russians. And I think some of them, if you asked, are you going to win the war, say yes. If you ask them, well, will the fighting stop? Will Chechnya be secure 5 years from now? I think if they were honest, they would say no, that the fighting in the region is going to go on indefinitely at some level.
My guest is Michael Gordon of the New York Times. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Joining us by satellite phone is Michael Gordon, who's covering the war in Chechnya for the New York Times. Have you had any close calls traveling with the Russian military through Chechnya?
Well, I don't like to think of them that way, but there have been some interesting episodes that I actually didn't, in all honesty, fully understand at the time that they occurred. There were three, which isn't that many over the span of some weeks. And I really don't think I've ever been in any serious danger, but I've been in, I would say, in three situations where nobody had control. One was, there's a town called Avtori, and I went on a helicopter with the Russian military after, it was on a Sunday a couple weeks ago, after a rather heavy morning of social drinking, which seems to be the national sport here. And landed in this town, and what happens is you get jump out of a helicopter into a sea of mud. If there's more mud in Chechnya, I think, than any other part of the world, if they could change it into gold, it would be the richest country on the face of the earth. And you clamber out of this helicopter, and then the form of road transportation is an armored personnel carrier. You jump on top of it, or climb on top of it, sit on top of it, now it's cold, and hang on tight. And all the soldiers, by the way, sit on top, too, because if you hit a mine, it's better to be on top than inside. And then you ride along the valleys and hills and roads until you get to some interesting place. And in this case, the interesting place was something called the White Wall. And they drove us there, and the militants were just 300, 400 meters away. They were shooting back and forth at each other. The militants were firing these trench mortars, and the Russians were firing just all sorts of things, rocket-propelled grenades and machine guns. They got us to the wall, said we could be there for 5 minutes. It turned out to be 2 minutes, and ran us back. So that was a situation where I would say, things weren't under anybody's control exactly, but danger or the press was somewhat limited by the fact they were only there for a couple of minutes as opposed to the soldiers who were there for days. And there was another occasion where, which was interesting from a journalism perspective, there was a town called Argun, which is east of Grozny. And the rebels invaded it about 10 days ago. It was January 9th, actually. And they surrounded it. They drove in on trucks somehow, even though it had been seized by the Russians in early December. They killed the Russian military commandant there. He's the only commandant who's been killed. They've set up a system where commandants rule each town. Were bombarded with artillery and fled. So we were taken there to show that the situation is under control, so to speak, and that the Russians have taken the town back. So no sooner do we get there than a soldier yells out from the roadside, as I recall, "They tell you three died here, but three of us died here," pointing out the problems with some of the official statistics. And then we're walking down a road, and these rather Rambo-type Russian snipers and stuff say, "Watch out for rebel snipers." I don't know what you're supposed to do in a situation like that. You either don't go or you go. I wouldn't even know how to watch out for a sniper. By the time they're like a kilometer away, you don't even hear the shot, I'm told. So nothing happened, and everyone else seemed to be more or less relaxed, so you sort of go with the flow, so to speak. It was an interesting situation in that we were brought to this town to show that the Russians controlled it, and the end result was we came out, but they really didn't fully control it. And that's some of the sorts of things you can learn, even when you're broken place by your Russian minders.
What's it like being taken around by the Russian military? Are they trying to give you propaganda all the time as they're showing you the war?
Well, they are more or less at a working level indifferent to what the Western press does. This whole operation down here is quite interesting. It's entirely designed to influence Russian television. There are hardly any Russian print reporters here. Occasionally a reporter drifts down from his Izvestia, but you hardly see any sort of war correspondent from any of the Russian newspapers or magazines. And so what the Russian press military here services is Russian television, the three main Russian television channels. One is state-owned, one's quasi-state-owned, and one's fairly independent. Ones that get in trouble for reporting casualties and things like that. This whole operation is essentially designed to put out positive reports about how the war is going for the benefit of Russian television, which is what the Russian military thinks is the most influential instrument for manipulating public opinion in Russia. And the New York Times and the BBC are more or less sort of along for the ride, and we're tolerated, and we're not really the main focus of their propaganda efforts.
Michael Gordon of the New York Times, speaking by satellite phone from Muzdok. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Michael Gordon, who's covering the war in Chechnya for the New York Times. The Russian military is trying to prevent Chechen rebels from breaking away from the Russian Federation and forming an independent republic. Gordon is staying across the Chechen border in Muzdok. Nearly every day he flies into Chechnya with the Russian military. We called him on a satellite phone late yesterday. How come you're going in and out of Chechnya with the Russian military as opposed to trying to get there yourself independently and, you know, seeing whatever you can on your own?
There are two ways of doing it. You either go in unofficially or you go in officially. Some Western journalists have gone into Chechnya without accreditation. There was a group that did a few weeks ago. Basically, you bounce around for a few days, they detain you and kick you out. And then you have 2 or 3 days of reporting, and then you find yourself deprived of access. I decided to try to do it officially and to try to get accreditation and to try to do it as much as possible with the Russian military. I covered the Gulf War, Panama, Kosovo, and so I had an interest in military affairs, and we tried very hard to persuade them that they ought to give us at least some very temporary accreditation. And accreditation is issued on the basis of a week here and there or so. And we would do it official channels, so to speak. And that's just the strategy we chose in the Moscow Bureau of the New York Times. And we tried very hard to persuade the Russian authorities to allow us to do this. But it's been quite difficult, I should have to say. Even though I've recounted to you some of the more memorable incidents, what I haven't told you about is the 3 days that we stood around in the mud because no one would take us anywhere, or our experience the other day, went to try to renew our accreditation where someone didn't want us to renew it, told us we had to go register with some local authority several hours' drive from here and then come back. So people have thrown obstacles in our way, and today is not a bad example. Today, neither we nor the BBC went anywhere, while Russian television crews did manage to go somewhere. So we don't always find ourselves so welcome, even with all of the appropriate documents and stamps and signatures that are required in this rather bureaucratic country.
You think the Russians are reading your stories in the New York Times?
I don't think so. I think that some officials in Moscow may read them. I think that the military here doesn't read them, but I just think that they're uncomfortable, at least at some level, with the very presence of Western reporters on their military base.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a holdover from the Cold War. But it's an attitude that's pretty deeply entrenched and which isn't, just does not go away very quickly.
So I think it's around midnight your time. Where are you now? Where do you spend your nights?
Now, by the way, I should emphasize I'm not alone in this. I have a Memphis colleague and interpreter who helps me with my improve on my functional Russian, Victor Klemenko. We have a photographer, James Hill, who's British, who also goes on these trips. We can't all go at the same time because there's not enough seats necessarily, so we kind of divvy it up. I always go, but sometimes we don't always go, or they take turns. But we rented a small house with a woman and her son, Pavel, in Mazdok, which is a pretty dreary place. During the Gulf War, you would go out with the American troops, and then where there were also some constraints in what you could do, but you would return to a four-star hotel with CNN and a minibar. And Mazdok is just a dreary military town. There's not much nightlife, not that I've ever had a chance to try to sample it. There are two or three acceptable restaurants. It's a bazaar where you can buy all sorts of interesting thing and shashlik and stuff. We stay in this house, renting a room, and people are very nice and hospitable here and feed us. There's certain amenities that I'm accustomed to that they don't have here, like plumbing. But, it's all part of the experience. Certainly, Mazdok may be dreary, but it has to be one of the cheapest places in the entire world. Today, we went to a local cafe called Ekos and had a meal that involved two or three main courses and three appetizers and three or four beers and salad and all of that. It was one of those days they left us standing in the mud and didn't take us anywhere. And the bill for this feast was $6, uh-huh. 167 rubles. So that's one of the few benefits, and maybe the only benefit of spending your time in this town.
Have you met any Chechen refugees in Mazdok where you're staying?
One of the interesting things I've done here is I've talked to some of the refugees, and I had just a heartbreaking experience talking to an old elderly Russian man. He's Russian, ethnic Russian, who was living in Grozny, had served in the Soviet Army, had 13 medals, in his 70s, I believe, probably in all the communist organizations. And his part of the small corps, they're not only Chechens who have fled the fighting in Grozny, they're Russians too. And he had been in his apartment in Grozny just a few weeks ago when it was hit, missile fired by a Russian plane, and demolished his apartment and killed his wife. And he's left highly destitute without his wife, homeless in his last remaining years after being hit missile fired by his own military, of which he was once a member. And there, unfortunately, hundreds and thousands of stories like that. I've never seen a place with so much misery and so many people who have lost everything. And these people who hide in Grozny and don't leave, they're not fools. They have is their little apartment. They don't have insurance. They're not like Americans. Oh, my house had a fire. I'll get the insurance will pay for it. There's nothing. They have their possessions and their little apartment. And if they leave, someone's going to steal all of it. And so they try not to leave. It's all they have. And then they're always doing this balancing act. Should I leave and lose everything I have and never get any compensation of any meaningful amount from the Russian government? Or should I stay, risk what's going to happen in Grozny when is Russian, my own country's artillery and warplanes bomb it and rebels run around? And that's the way you run across many of these stories. And children and old people and women and innocent young men and young men who are not so innocent who sort of fade back into the population. And so there's probably more misery per square mile in this part of the world than in many others.
Michael Gordon is the New York Times Moscow bureau chief. He spoke to us from across the Chechen border in Mazdok by satellite phone. Coming up, we talk with the Times Moscow correspondent Celestine Bolin about the politics of the war in Chechnya. This is Fresh Air.